Hey there, Stylish Thoughtbot podcast listener. We're back with another Thoughtbot swag sale. For the rest of the year, you can show your support for our podcast with shirts, pint glasses, and even limited edition socks. We have two new designs specifically for giant robots and bike shed t-shirts that have only before been available at conferences. For the production and shipping, we are proud to once again be partnering with Social Imprints, who provide career opportunities and a living wage to people who need a second chance. So help support your favorite podcasts, provide employment opportunities for at-risk populations, and get some nifty Thoughtbot swag. Head over to thoughtbot.com/podcasts to place your order and show your support. And hey, thanks.
Last week, I went to my kid's classroom as the mystery reader.
He's
in kindergarten. So you just like, it's a parent or relative or whatever that comes in the morning and reads a book. And so I got there and I was dressed up for the occasion. Not really. Mm. I was dressed up because we had our fancy dinner that night.
Oh, gotcha.
So, you know, she was like, wow, you're dressed up for this occasion. I was like, yeah, this is very important to me. And then, the teacher's giving me the rundown. She's like, the kids are going to have questions during the book. They'll put their hands up, hopefully, and you can call on them or not. But, you might have to cut them off and, all this other stuff. Like, you might, they might not really be questions. And I was like, I've spoken at conferences before. I'm familiar with this line of questioning. And then sure enough, first page, five hands go up. So I'm like, yeah, go ahead. What's your question? And this girl's like, this is a rhyming book.
Yep. Uh-huh. You would do well at tech conferences, young one.
Did you already have your Ralphapalooza thing?
We did.
Okay, we can talk about that.
Yeah.
But I do want to talk about your conference talk.
Yeah, we can definitely do that.
It went well.
It did. It went really well.
Yeah, it was well attended as you joked.
It was. I think as much as I would love to take all the credit for that, it was Kotlin Conf, and it was actually my first language conference, so I wasn't even sure what to expect in terms of, I use Kotlin for Android. At that point, I hadn't used it for anything else, so I have only ever been to Android conferences, and so it was interesting to see how people are using the same language. We're like, oh my god, I can read that, but I have no idea what you're talking about outside of the fact that I can read it.
And I saw early on in your presentation, I only watched your presentation from the conference, but early on you were like, and this is going to be about using Kotlin for Android.
Yeah.
And I was like, is there something else that I know you can do something with it. Is there something else that people are doing with it?
Yeah, you can write servers in it. You can write backend in it. I think because it compiles down to the JVM, pretty much anything you could do in Java, you can now do in Kotlin. I think Spring has their web client that you used to be able to write Java and you can now use Kotlin for. You can write JavaScript, or there's a JavaScript arch or whatever the word is, I'm forgetting.
Bridge?
Something, bridge, thank you. A bridge that you can write JavaScript in it, a lot of different things. And there are people talk. You can write iOS apps now because there's, with Kotlin Native, the introduction of Kotlin Native, they actually have a way to basically bridge Kotlin to C. And so if you can get to C, you can get to some of the core iOS frameworks, which is kind of crazy. I went to the talk and you're watching it, you're like, okay. And then he was running an iOS simulator, oh my God, I'm not sure I could reproduce this, but it saw it and it was real. So,
but that's not the kind of thing that you could write once and then be like, look, I have an iOS app and an Android app.
No,
still calling into actual native APIs. But
uh-huh.
I don't know. I guess maybe somebody could build a React. Is there a React Native type thing that's you mentioned Kotlin Native. What's Kotlin Native?
Kotlin Native just allows you, I believe, to compile Kotlin code without the JVM. So you can just compile Kotlin so it can be used for things like Raspberry Pis, or it allows it basically so you it is a way to separate it from Java and the JVM.
Cool. And I also just perusing the list of things that were in the playlist to the side as your talk was going on. I saw somebody just talking about building React apps in Kotlin.
Yep.
And that must be using that JavaScript bridge that you were talking about. Yeah. All right. Pretty exciting. I Kotlin as a language. If I had to pick just looking between, I'm not a mobile developer. So looking at what Swift looks like and looking I'd rather Kotlin. That looks more interesting.
Yeah. I think there are things about Swift that I definitely like. I think the difference for me is the thing that I like the most is Kotlin feels more stable to me than Swift. It does feel like Apple keeps introducing every year there's a new Swift version and it's breaking changes. And that might just be the fact from hearsay from the iOS engineers, which is that they've coupled the tooling to the language, which is unfortunate. Mm-hmm. So at least Kotlin is separate, which is nice. But Kotlin does feel more stable, especially because of the fact that it has to compile down to the JVM. And that thing hasn't changed in a long time.
Right. They don't make breaking changes.
Yeah.
Yeah. That reminds me of like when I was doing C# development years ago, like a new version of Visual Studio would come out and you'd be like, oh, well, this writes C# 2.0.
Yeah.
Or whatever. And then eventually it came to the point where you could actually like select the oh, I want to target Visual Studio, whatever.
Yeah.
Which was itself weird, but.
Yeah. I think Xcode has something similar to that, but it's still like not a pleasant experience. Just again, from like reading iOS developers on Twitter, you're like, oh God, this seems awful.
Xcode has never really seemed like a pleasant experience to me. And I've taken I've only done like, oh, let's do a tutorial on building an iOS app. And
yeah.
It's always been like almost any IDE. Like I'm spoiled by having used Visual Studio, which is as much as I just said, like that was kind of a pain in the butt, the versioning part. But like Visual Studio itself is awesome. And I don't know if Android Studio, is it basically IntelliJ?
Yep. Okay. It's just an IntelliJ wrapper. So it's very good. It's very stable. I like it a lot. I think we are spoiled. I think the people at JetBrains also helps. They write Kotlin now. They understand tooling and they understand it from a developer mindset. And I think my issue with Xcode personally is always, I don't think they even know who they're building it for, because I think it's a mix of like developers who actually know how to code and want to use things like Vim, and then people who just want to build iOS apps like using an entire like GUI. And so it's this weird mix of like, what level of developer are you building this for? And I think if they just committed to one, it would probably be better.
Yeah, perhaps. And like the JetBrains people, like in Ruby land, they make basically the only IDE I've ever seen anybody use for Ruby.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Which is RubyMine, which is based on IntelliJ.
Yeah.
Like everything they write is based on
Python.
PyCharm, all that stuff, WebStorm, and things like that.
And I just think the whole system of like having plugins available, like it's a really extendable system, so it allows like the core functionality to be working all the time and unchanging, and obviously make improvements. But because of the way the plugins work, I think that that is a nice thing that Xcode just doesn't have at all.
Yeah. And I think if I ever went, like I still use Vim for everything. I don't use RubyMine, but I have, and I see why people do use it.
Mm-hmm.
It just strikes me as like incomplete because there's so much dynamic stuff about Ruby that it's like, oh, it got so close here, but not quite. But if I ever went back to something that had more strong typing, I think an IDE. Like I know you can do that stuff in Vim. I don't know. What do you still write? Do you write Kotlin in Vim and just use Android Studio for like compilation stuff, or do you write it all?
I have a Vim plugin for Android Studio. So I use Android Studio and I basically have Vim for all the basic functionality. It does get a little weird. There are some things that I don't use Vim for, like the IDE key bindings, which work just fine, but it's like a weird bastardized, I think, Vim, as opposed to if you just actually use proper Vim.
Right. And that's where I've always, like Paul from our office, now he also has Chad trying out Visual Studio Code, which is actually really nice. Like, I've seen his setup, and it seems nice, but it just seems like, as soon as you're like, and then I use it with Vim bindings, I'm like, oh, but this particular Vim binding doesn't work. And then, like, oh, I've got to drop down to, like, I've got to change the way my mind thinks of, like, now I have to issue command something, rather, because I'm issuing commands to the application, not to my editor kind of thing. And that's where it always falls down for me. But I would like to try it. I don't know. I'm jealous of some of the stuff I've seen in Visual Studio Code. But again, I think just a lot of the dynamicism, the dynamic nature of Ruby kind of, I don't know how good it can be at that stuff, other than just being like, I don't know, here's a thing, here's a term I've seen in your app. You want to autocomplete that?
Right.
Rather than like, I know exactly the type of object you're dealing with and here's what you can do. And oh, by the way, here's the documentation on that method and here are the parameters it takes. And
it was interesting at KotlinConf, there was someone who gave a talk on linting. His name is Tor. He spoke at, I think, a million miles a minute, but one of the really cool things they've been doing with Kotlin and linting and like showing helpful tips is it's not just like, let me autocomplete this for you. Sometimes you'll write a statement and, for example, you'll do a for loop and it'll be like, do you want to maybe try this new Kotlin feature that would write it this way? And like, that is really cool. So they're not warning so much as it's like actually education tools, which I think is an incredible thing that I wouldn't have thought about originally. Because you think of an IDE as just being helpful for autocomplete or formatting or import kind of stuff, but it's actually now an education tool as well.
Yeah, and that reminds me, again, going back to my C# days and going back to JetBrains, is they wrote a tool called ReSharper, which was a lot of the same stuff you were just talking about on top of Visual Studio. So you would, like, I would write C#, and that's, I think it's how I learned like C# 2.0. I only knew 1.0, and I'm in 2.0, so I'm writing stuff from 1.0, and it's like, hey, would you like to write it like this?
Yep.
Or like I would write SQL statements and be like, do you want to use link, which is like some new SQL thing? And I was like, yeah, all right. And
perfect.
I was like, oh, I like how that looks. That's interesting. And that's how I learned, like it actually taught me a lot of the new features of the language, which is really powerful and something I would never get from them, right?
Yep. And same thing, you can actually, if you paste Java code in, it will be like, do you want me to convert this to Kotlin for you? And so I think if you're learning, it's awesome because you're like, oh, you know exactly what the Java code looks like and you can see it. back to back to be like, oh, this is what this function looks like in Kotlin. It doesn't do a perfect job because anytime anything besides a human generates code, and even if a human generates it, there are going to be some weird problems and idiosyncrasies, especially with nullability. But it's a really cool tool, I think, for beginners.
Yeah. Now you're making me long for it again. Gotta get back into it. So we just had our end of the year Ralphapalooza event here, mm-hmm. which is like, for folks who don't know, which is anybody who doesn't work at ThoughtBot.
Yes. That's most people.
Each one of our local offices has like an end of the year event where we usually have our investment day on Friday, but we also take an investment day on Thursday. And I don't know how it is. You were doing yours in your San Francisco office, obviously. Yep. But in Boston, it's like a pretty intense couple of days where it's like everybody's, oh my God. And like we have demos at 4 o'clock. You're supposed to like demo something hopefully shippable at that point. And like people are like freaking out at, 3:50 to try and get their last five changes in, that kind of thing. So we just went through that. What'd you work on?
I actually worked on Kotlin Native. So one of our designers in San Francisco, he's the coolest person, I think. Probably works at ThoughtBot, but definitely in the San Francisco office. And so in leading the charge,
I don't want to insult anybody, but is it Tyler?
It is Tyler. Okay. He had an idea for in San Francisco, if you've ever taken BART, there are train signs. Most train stations or subways everywhere have these signs, but it just says what line is coming in and how many minutes. And a lot of people in the San Francisco office commute from Oakland. And so he had this idea of building you can buy your own train sign. It's $300, which was a little bit outside the budget of user best judgment. So we wanted to build something that did tell the people in the office, like a sign that we could put up so they knew when the next BART was. Mm-hmm. There were a bunch of different options. We decided to kind of go with the Raspberry Pi route. And originally we had crazy ideas with like lights, LED light strips, and like we could display full text. And then we kind of got talking into how many, like if you think of a scoreboard with a grid of like 3 by 6 kind of dots, and then you could just show the time and whatever color it was, that would mean the train. There was a bunch of different iterations. It turns out that getting a single LED light to light up on a Raspberry Pi, if you're using languages and frameworks you've never heard of, is really complicated. So for our presentation, we just had 3 lights, one LED that was red, one that was blue, and it just blinked. I think that was the end result that we got. So not quite up to our original expectations, but it was a ton of fun. And I think we bought more lights to actually properly do it in the future. It was just the 2-day deadline with the addition of trying to get hardware. It's really hard to buy hardware anywhere anymore because everyone expects you to buy it on Amazon or somewhere on the internet. And so if you have just 2 days and you start talking about this Thursday morning, you're like, I can't get anything in person by Friday afternoon.
And even if you're like, we did a similar project. I wasn't on the team here, but we did a similar project where Justin had bought these like LED board things. And we have it upstairs on the 7th floor.
A breadboard?
Kind of, it just, if you see it up on 7, it just has an image of each one of the conference room one of the conference room logos.
Oh, the robots, yeah.
Yeah, the robots. And like they change to red if the conference room's not available, that kind of thing. But like I remember listening to, it was like Chad and Justin and a couple other people doing it. I just remember listening to them swear about like they couldn't get anything to light up, and it turned out like they had the wires wired backwards or like just various things. They had to do things in C and like it's the kind of thing. And then like Justin thought he had everything that he needed, and then it was like, oh, actually, like we need this one thing. And like there used to be a Radio Shack downstairs, and now there isn't because Radio Shack's not a thing anymore.
That was exactly our situation.
Yep, you miss things like that, obviously. Yeah. The 2-day deadline, I really enjoy it. It's funny because like right before we were doing our presentation, So every week I have to listen to this podcast on very, very fast speed because I've already talked about it, but I need to like jog my memory on what we said because I do the show notes for the podcast. And so the way I do that is like Tom has a Trello card and I add the show notes to there, which have to be in Markdown so they get rendered. And then also the Markdown gets copied out to Simplecast, which accepts Markdown for show notes. So it's like, all right. So each time I do that, I go and I'm like, oh, we talked about this GitHub issue. Mm-hmm. Let me go look up that GitHub issue, copy it, paste it into here. Oh, I should give it a title. So let me give it a title. And I like do all that manually. And I was like, oh, you know, I kind of just want like a bookmarklet for this. And I'm sure something like this exists. But then I also have to be able to get Markdown out of it. So that was my first thing. I was like, oh, I'll just build this thing. But how am I going to convince anybody to work on like a show notes bot for me? So we started thinking about generalizing it more. And so now it's more of like a way to compile a list of aggregated links on a subject and give some context around it.
Yeah.
So the example we gave is in our development chat room, I don't know, maybe a few weeks ago now, there was a conversation about pairing practices, like how, like what are some good articles on pairing and different setups and different tactics for using during pairing. And a lot of really good links came out of that.
Yeah.
And we thought it'd be cool to have like one page that maybe you go to like this app /ThoughtBot/pairing.
Yeah.
And it's like all of ThoughtBot's like best links on pairing.
Oh, cool.
I don't know if you worked here when we had like trail maps.
No.
So we had this idea for a while. We just stopped maintaining them, but there were this idea of trail maps that was like, if you're a beginning Ruby developer, here's what you should know. Intermediate Ruby developer, here's what you should know. And each one of them was a link to like blog posts or training or something
that.
And I was like, oh, it's kind of like a return to that.
Yeah.
And also I can use it for show notes, which I just did for the last episode that went out. I
used and it worked?
To, yeah, it works.
Nice.
Not prepared to say the URL yet because of, as these things go, as you were just talking about, you're like, oh, we have some more work to do here.
Mm-hmm.
But in the morning when I like pitched this idea, there were a few people interested. And I originally pitched it as like a web app we could potentially write in Crystal.
Ooh, okay.
Which Paul Smith, somebody who works here, has written Lucky, which is a web framework for Crystal. And I was like, we could do that because I thought it might be more appealing to people.
Yeah.
The team that ended up forming was me and Chris, who has been here the same amount of time and have done a few of these Ralphapalooza things.
Yeah.
And then Rachel and Herman, who were new to Ralphapalooza this year.
Yeah.
And so they were kind of like, yeah, maybe Elixir. And I was like, yeah, I could probably do, I could definitely do Elixir. I've written Elixir apps before. And then we were like, well, maybe, you know, you guys have worked on Scala before. Maybe we could do the Scala web app. And Chris was just like, no, we're using Rails because I want to finish a thing.
And it was like
So that's what we ended up writing it in Rails. And it was like, on one hand, it was like, oh, well, we didn't really learn anything.
Right.
We did a couple new things within the Rails app, but like nothing earth-shattering. We didn't really learn anything new, but we also got to something usable pretty quickly. Like I was able to use it this week to do what I want. And like, it just it needs some design help and a couple more features and things like that.
We had some projects like that in San Francisco where everyone was like, I just want to build something. Like they cared more about just working with coworkers and having fun than the overhead of trying to learn something new, which I can totally empathize with because I'm not all embarrassed to admit that when I started the Kotlin Native tutorial, I found this tutorial online that showed how to work with Kotlin Native, specifically with a Raspberry Pi and then specifically with lighting up LEDs. And the first line in the tutorial is like, you obviously have to run this on a Linux VM. And I just read right past that. And so I'm trying to run all these things on my Mac and nothing is working. And I'm just getting like increasingly frustrating. I'm like, and I was Googling the errors and the errors didn't make any sense. I couldn't find anything on Stack Overflow for why I was getting these errors. And then I realized several hours into it that I was obviously not running it on a Linux machine and that would be why. So I can see why people don't want to try something new.
Right. Yeah. And in the past, I've been on teams that are like trying to do something new. And I'm always jazzed about it for the first day. And then the second day, I'm like, is there a part of this that's a bit more familiar that I could just like get, feel like I got something done?
Yeah.
Because there is that idea that like, we're going to share what we did.
Yep.
On and I like I like that because it makes it different from any other Friday that we typically have, which is like kind of more open-ended. And hopefully after a series of weeks or months, you have, you know, a string of things that you have come out of investment time. But like, this is more like, show us what you got.
Yeah.
And this year we even had a People's Choice Award.
Ooh. Where
we did it by applause, like who...
very nice.
You know, who got the most applause. And it was like, Chad had to be the judge, but it was basically like everyone got a very polite round of applause.
Aww. Really like golf clap.
One team did write an app in Crystal with the Lucky framework.
Okay.
About like tracking events that we're hosting or going to and things like that. And like putting reminders in Slack. Because oftentimes, like we found one of the things in our office is like somebody will mention it stand up like, oh, by the way, I'm speaking at this meetup tonight. And they're like, oh, well, I can't. It's too late for me to do that now.
Yeah.
But if you'd told me on Monday.
Yeah.
And they're like, well, I did say it in stand up. And they're like, well, I wasn't that stand up.
Right.
So that kind of thing. And their experience was actually really good for using that. So I want to have Paul on the show at some point to tell us more about that. Because I think it's pretty promising. It's Ruby-like with types. So Rails-inspired framework. So that's cool. I'm trying to think of what other projects. Oh, we had a group of people, so it's not just technical projects. We had a group of people do screen printing.
Oh,
like,
that's right.
Learn how to
that
do screen
really
printing.
That looked really cool.
Yeah, it looked really involved, and it was cool to see. Like, I got at the end when we did the presentation, they just showed us how it worked, and I was like, I had no idea that's how screen printing worked.
Yeah,
and you actually got to do it, and they're like talking about like doing more of it and putting up the art around the office. So that's cool.
Nice.
We had one where like, have you seen Frankiac?
No.
It's like a GIF. It's a search engine for Simpsons quotes.
Amazing.
And then it gives you like a GIF from using like the closed caption data, gives you a GIF of like when that quote happened.
That's fantastic.
And so John,
I have a Dropbox folder of literally just Simpson GIFs and Simpson memes that I like save and then like randomly browse through. This is so much more efficient.
So you should check that out. So John, he started, which I think is a little bit cheating, but he started before Ralphapalooza.
Okay.
It's a little bit of cheating, okay.
We'll excuse it.
On this app where you could like upload arbitrary, like, here's my videos for The Office is the example he used. He owns The Office Season 1, so here are my videos for The Office Season 1. Here's the closed caption data that goes with that.
Oh my gosh,
and then
like
piecing that together. And so they have that. And that was pretty cool to see. Like, I think they only had The Office Season 1 and like one movie or something like that. There's all sorts of rights issues.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
I don't know how the Simpsons things works. Like, yeah. I was talking to somebody about it, and they're like, well, if you're only sharing small clips, it's actually fair use if you own the source material. And I was like, I don't know. You seem to be distributing it.
Mm. Yeah. yeah, that is interesting. I remember for a summit when I gave a talk on the Pixar theory, and I own all the Pixar movies, and I really wanted to take screenshots of the movies to use in the talk, and I own them in HD, and so it seemed like I should be able to do this, but because of how iTunes works, there's no way, like, you can't take a screenshot of iTunes when it's playing content because it, like, grays it out. And so it was these weird, I was like, I own this. I don't know why this is so difficult, but I just ended up having to, like, find on Google Images, like, pictures to use. But if someone had a tool that would allow me to take iTunes movies that I own and then just take screenshots to use pictures, and again, I have no idea if that's illegal and I'm asking someone to break the law, but it would have been helpful for me this summer. Yeah.
That was my favorite talk of of our summer summit. So
yes, it was my favorite talk that I've ever
given. It's on YouTube now, right?
It is, yeah.
Okay, so we can link to it and people can see it in the show notes. There's a conspiracy, I guess.
Yes.
Would you say it's a conspiracy?
Just a theory, really.
Okay.
I think conspiracy has a pejorative tone, and it's Pixar, so to be negative seems aggressive.
Yeah, there's nothing negative about it, really, except for the whole Cars taking over.
Yeah, it's more of a unified universe theory, which is that all Pixar, the idea is that all Pixar movies take place in the same universe, and it is by no means my original theory. I think what made that talk so kind of just ridiculous was that during Summit, we all give lightning, not we all, but a select people volunteer to give lightning talks, and so I volunteered to give this talk, and the talks were supposed to be 5 minutes, and mine ended up being 19. And while I was talking, one of the office managers kept holding up her phone to show me how long I had been talking for, but I thought she was showing me the time, because it said like 12, and it was like in the middle of like the morning, afternoon, so it said like 11, and I was like, I'm not going to do the math while I'm giving this presentation of how many minutes I've been talking for. Didn't even occur to me that I'd been talking for 11 minutes. So I just kept going.
I saw that in the front row. I saw when she was doing that in the front row. I was like, I don't think Amanda has any idea what's happening right now.
I just literally thought it was the time of day. And then like at some point it like came back as like 13, I think. And then I was like, I have no idea what these numbers.
What does 13 mean?
Like, that doesn't mean anything in time. And it didn't occur to me like, oh, this is just like a clock. Like, she's just a stopwatch. But
it didn't matter because people like the talk. They
were
into
that's true. Yeah.
If you were boring us, then we would have walked out.
Shut it up. Yeah. People would have just gotten up. So are you doing anything fun for the end of the year? Are you taking any time off, going anywhere?
I don't think so. I should probably take some time off after Christmas.
Yeah.
How about you?
I think I'm going to do that. I always have this dilemma with vacations where I want to both actually go on vacation or do nothing and staycation. But then there's all those like kind of to-dos. Like even though we have investment day, which is a great opportunity to like do side projects or things you want to work on. If there's like a new language you want to learn, I'm always like, maybe I'll just take a couple days off and then work. But then you're like, work thinks I've taken time off, but my body knows that I haven't taken time off. So it's this like, I don't know what to do.
So you say take a couple days off and work. Like just be like, I'm going to take a couple days off, but work on whatever I want without feeling guilty about work.
Or having to be on Slack and you just like really get to like work on whatever you want. And that always sounds so attractive to me. But then I'm like, I don't have, that's actually not time off. And so that's counterproductive sometimes. So
yeah, when we had the unlimited time off policy.
Yeah.
We had a developer who took time off and then came into the office to work on open source work.
I totally empathize with that. That makes perfect sense to me.
It's like, oh, you found the loophole in the system. Yep. Now you are working on paid open source.
Yes. Well done.
So yeah, that was cool.
Yeah.
I have a list of things that we could possibly talk about. What do you think about Derek Jeter buying a baseball team with somebody else's money and then immediately sending the team's best player
back to the Yankees
for nothing, essentially?
I think it's a mess. I think it's a total mess, and I think it's embarrassing for baseball. It's a bit of an extreme, but I do think it's embarrassing. I don't think this whole trade process made Giancarlo Stanton look particularly good either, and not just because
he refused to go to the Giants.
Yeah, not just because he refused to go to the Giants. I think he and his agent misled a bunch of teams about the severity of which he was actually looking at these teams. I don't think it looks good for the Marlins to... I think they pressured him into the situation that he ended up in, and like, we absolutely need to sell you today. And it's like, just because you can't afford him, I think the whole thing was just a mess.
Yeah, it seems basically brought on by the fact that they couldn't afford to own the team in the first place.
Right. Yes.
But they were like, oh, Derek Jeter could own a baseball team. We want that to happen. And
right.
Then, yeah, interesting. And then he ends up going, I don't think there was any sort of like grand conspiracy
to
send him to the
either.
Yankees.
Yeah.
But I do enjoy the conspiracy theory.
Absolutely. I love propagating conspiracy theory stories. Yep.
And everybody who listens to this podcast usually is now saying like,
yeah,
what is this baseball?
I was in it for rails and now we're talking about Derek Jeter.
Let's see, what else is on my list here?
Yeah.
React Native. I want to get your thoughts on React Native, because I know you're not a huge fan.
I am not a huge fan, but I just last week finished, I think, my third or fourth week on a React Native project.
Okay.
And I don't know if it's a case of imposter syndrome, or it's a reality that I do in fact not know any JavaScript. That's not imposter syndrome. I don't know JavaScript, but I can read English and I know other programming languages. And I think that, so as a native mobile developer, I think a lot of the times when web developers come to me with React Native questions, it's always about specifically Gradle, and which is the build process for Android. And in a regular Android app, I am not doing half of the crazy things that React Native is doing to try and build the app. And so a lot of the problems are wild. Like, I don't even know how, if I wanted to, I couldn't get an app into that kind of state. So that's always interesting, because you feel like people are coming to you, oh, you're an Android developer, help me. And you're like, I couldn't do this if I wanted to, because now I'm coming up against the hundreds of Facebook engineers who have decided that this is how React Native is going to work with Gradle, but like, I don't understand it all. That was originally why I kind of came on, as I think it was actually like a Gradle problem. And so I solved that one, got kind of lucky. I was like, oh, this is actually an Android thing, so I can do this. And then the dependency management, I think, is another funky thing that isn't great. There is no other way to do it, I get. I'm not the person who would come up with it anyway. But for Android, again, the build system is where you declare dependencies deterministically. And I think in web, it's a lot more common to not do that. So it'll like just point to some library, and maybe the version, it just like pulls the latest version. And that can really mess with Android things, especially because if you have a dependency on an Android library and another library that you're using points to a different Android library, that can cause conflicts. Mm-hmm. And so when you don't have any way to debug that because none of the dependencies are deterministic, that gets really frustrating. So that I don't enjoy. But then I did just find myself getting lucky with some of the JavaScript. And I think using RxJava and reactive programming in Android was really honestly the thing that helped me the most, because you're like, okay, understand this concept of React, at least from a high level. But yeah, I don't enjoy not having types. I like types a lot. And so switching to React, the biggest concern for me was that there are no types. And so you're reading functions and you're like, I don't know what this returns. And I don't think the function knows what it returns.
Yeah, I've only done very little React Native, like, again, during investment time and things like that. And it's always seemed like I understand what I'm doing when I'm writing the JavaScript, because I do know JavaScript.
Yep.
And so I understand that part. And then there's this big mysterious thing that happens to get me into a simulator.
Yep.
And I'm like, I don't know what's going on there.
Yep.
But like, cool.
Yeah.
And I think that some of the stuff you talked about, like the non-deterministic dependencies, there's some stuff that's happening to make that better. Like with
that's good.
Bigger, more steps have been taken with like things like Yarn and NPM version 5, where you get like a lock file.
That's like, okay. Here
are the actual versions of your dependencies. If you would like to update them, you must actually say,
got it,
update this version of the dependency.
Yeah.
But that is definitely true that was, and maybe perhaps still is, like the norm of like, I semantically said you can give me 3.x.x, and
exactly.
Now I'm relying on the developer to just
know
that like they will never break this contract, and there are no types, so I can't tell if you're breaking the contract
exactly.
or not, but that type of thing. But I see why it's appealing to people who need apps.
Oh, absolutely.
Right?
From a business perspective, it makes perfect sense to me.
Right. But I wish it was better.
Yeah.
And from like an app user, I think there are likely uses of React Native that I don't know are React Native, but I feel like I can almost always tell that like this is different.
Yeah.
And it's fine. Mm-hmm. I think it's an okay starting point, but I think that you probably reach a point where you're like, now we want to be native on both the platforms. But I think that that's an okay trade-off to make depending on the stage of your business.
Yeah. And I think there are a lot of really good pros to React Native. Again, my qualms are mostly with JavaScript, and then I have some other ones with React Native specifically in terms of how it works on mobile and performance and memory. I think a lot of that's just hard to do, to like abstract on top of, but separate conversation. I think the things that I do like, though, are the tooling. And I think mobile would benefit greatly from some of the tooling that web developers have. During Ralphpalooza, I paired a little bit with a web developer, and it's awesome what you guys have compared to what mobile developers have. I mean, simple things, but like live reloading, that's a wild concept that like they kind of have started to introduce on Android with Instant Run, but it's not as dependable or as nice. And also like any of the Chrome debugging tools, all the inspectors, we just don't have it at that level. And so that's amazing.
Cool.
That I'm really jealous of. So I do hope that both Apple and Google see React Native, and as much as they obviously are invested in native, they see what are the pros and what people do enjoy about it, because the tooling to me is one of the nicest things.
Yeah. Like you said, I think that JavaScript is the hang up, at least for me. And I know there's a lot of people who really, really love JavaScript. I'm just not one of them. And it's okay.
Yeah.
You can love your JavaScript, but like we for the React Native app that I've worked on, which was Purple Train.
Yeah.
We, at one point, or actually, I think its current state is it's written in Elm Native UI, which is like this bridge to React.
Interesting.
And it was cool to write like basic stuff in it because you write it in Elm. And I don't know Elm either, but I know Haskell-ish and it's close enough. And like, I can kind of like, and so like, I worked on one feature of that with Ian here, and it was really awesome to just be like, it was like, well, where do we want to start? We want to like introduce this new thing to this code path here. And I was like, well, where should we start? And Ian was just like, anywhere. It doesn't matter. Let's just start here.
Yeah.
And like, then we'll just follow the compiler errors.
Yeah.
I was like, oh my gosh, this is so awesome.
Yeah.
But then the problems we had with that were like, it's a leaky abstraction into into Elm land.
Yeah.
And we often had to write, like, we eventually wanted to do push notifications, and I think that entire code is just JavaScript.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I think one of the Ralphapalooza projects is Ian, who has now written this app twice, once in React Native, once in Elm Native UI, is now writing it in Swift.
And, and I think people are writing Kotlin.
And then Alex is writing in Kotlin as like, why don't we do two native apps out of it? And it's really, it's a good project because like, it's one of those projects that's like simple enough concept, simple enough UI, not a lot of complex interactions.
Yep.
So you can learn a lot of, like, it taught a lot of people on our team React Native, and it taught a lot of people on our team Elm.
That's awesome.
And now people are going to get another Swift and, and Kotlin project out of it. So it's like a perfect investment / Ralphapalooza project that worked out well. But there's so much stuff that, like, once I had the app, and I'm a user of the app because I live on the commuter rail.
Oh, perfect.
So, like, once I had the app, I was like, oh, I actually want a lock screen widget.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it was like, can I do that in React Native? And it was like, not really yet. And like, I want, and then like, Ian has a watch, and it's like, I can't do a watch app. Can't do, like, so all sorts of stuff that we just wanted to do that for our 38 users.
Right,
we
exactly. And I think that that's one of those. It's hard enough, I think, for the individual frameworks to come up with an abstraction for, I have this blog post that I've been writing for about a year now. By writing, I mean, I keep trying, like adding a note to myself of, oh, I should talk about that in the blog post, but about the core differences between what I see as like the big differences between Android and iOS in terms of frameworks. And one of them is lists and how the frameworks individually abstract the concept of showing a list of items. For Android, for example, they use the thing called recycler view, which in its name itself reminds you that like views can be recycled, which is like more efficient. So especially if it's like the data cells, if you think about like the commuter rail, if you're scrolling really quickly, it would be incredibly expensive to just have to reinflate every view from scratch. Whereas if it's just the data that's changing, they can do that more efficiently and they handle all of that for you. Mm-hmm. And I think on the iOS side, it's a totally different approach in terms of like the components that make up how you show a list. And so for React Native to come on top of what are already two abstractions, you have how Android does it, how iOS does it, and they're like, we're going to come up with a third abstraction, I think is really hard. And I think that that's where, when you say you notice some of the differences, I think, and with performance especially, like the frameworks are trying to be as performant as possible for you and for the code that you're writing. But when you're abstracting on top of it, that becomes more difficult to do. So like, again, I know Android a little bit better, but for recycler view, there's recycler view is just a view group. So it's just a collection of views. And then it has this other class called an adapter, which is the thing that binds your data and tells you, it has three methods you have to override, like onCreate view and then onBind view, which takes some data, which is not attached to the adapter, but takes whatever you want and then actually attaches it to the view. So those are the two kind of components that you're working with. And in iOS, it's not that. It's something different that I don't remember at this time because I haven't written iOS in like 6 months, but it's a fundamentally different approach. And so I think to, again, like I said, to come up on top of both of those and try and make it both work is hard because there's such different ideologies and approaches to showing it like a data, a list of data.
So you do iOS development as well?
Dabble? Yeah, I dabble. I do it on the side. I used to do a lot of work with an iOS developer in San Francisco, and it was just helpful for me to be able to review his PRs. And if we were on the same project, I knew all the business logic. I knew all the designs, the projects. So it was easier if I could code review if I actually had knew something about iOS.
Do you think it's like, so this is more of a broad question, but do you think it's like almost necessary if you're a mobile developer to be like aware of both of these platforms? Or do you think you could go your whole career and just be like, I'm an Android developer, I'm an iOS developer?
I think that's a probably question you could apply to like, as a web developer, do you feel like you need to know every language? Like, is there, I don't know enough about the individual languages, but do you feel you need to be involved in mobile? Do you feel you need to know SQL? Do you need to know all, it can apply anywhere. So it's, I think it's a personal preference thing. And I like doing it because I like being able to talk to other people. And I think it's interesting to understand, especially like it's so easy to be in mobile and be like, I'm team Android and I hate iOS. But like, obviously, like, there are really smart engineers working on that platform too, and maybe there are things we can learn about the way they approach frameworks and the things that they do. So I took it more of a learning approach, and I found it interesting and allowed me to communicate better with teammates because they're not always Android developers everywhere, and maybe they're more iOS developers. So if you want to work with people, you got to make some compromises.
Yeah, you drew the corollary to like learning any language or any skill, really. And that's always like, I remember the first language I learned being like, oh, Perl is great.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then you learn the second language and you're like, Perl is stupid. This new language is great. And then eventually you learn enough new languages that you're like, actually, each language kind of has its benefits.
Yeah.
And the advantage of learning a new language is I get to look at like the way that this language solves this problem.
Exactly.
And see if maybe, like, even though I'm not writing that language every day, is there something I can take from that?
Right.
Like, so in the iOS and Android, is there some sort of way that they look at this problem on iOS that's more applicable to Android or vice versa?
Exactly. Yeah.
And being able to do that, particularly when you're in consulting, where like the work is different every time. You know, I could see if you worked for a major company who had mobile applications, you may never need to know. Like, that's the iOS app. I don't really know anything about that.
But and I think that's one of the reasons why React Native, actually, from a business perspective, is so attractive. Netflix is always my go-to company for this example, where Netflix has an app on iOS, Android, Apple TV. I think they have a Roku app. They probably have an Amazon app, like six platforms right there. And none of those developers, depending on, again, I don't know anything about the internals of Netflix, but hypothetically, from the like in the beginning, when you're solving modeling problems, you're solving business logic problems, someone on the iOS team might not necessarily communicate with someone on the Android team. So now you're having to pay not only two developers to develop two apps, but you're not getting to take advantage of the fact that these developers might be able to learn from each other and work with each other. And that's, unless like you have an amazing company structure, which a lot of places do, and Netflix might, I have no idea, but that's something that I think React Native is nice for, because, and I see this at Thoughtbot a lot, when you have, with web projects, you know, because so many of our designers, all of them know how to code, they can pair with the backend developers and they can work together. Whereas on mobile designers, it's harder to get designers who know how to code for mobile. So the more you can be working with other people and learning from other people, I just think it's better.
Yeah. Awesome. So anything that enables that type of workflow is definitely worth looking into.
Yeah.
We just wish it wasn't JavaScript, I
guess. Yeah. We could just do it with types. I'd be totally sold.
Well, you have the Kotlin to React. So now you just need the Kotlin to React Native bridge. And there you go.
Yeah. And that would be just the most hilarious full circle kind of. Let me go outside so I can come back inside so I can be inside, which is all I wanted to be in the first place, but just a roundabout kind of way.
That reminds me of, like, I don't know, maybe a year or two ago, somebody shared a link that was like React Native Web, and it was like to run React Native on the web. And I was like, I literally did not get it. I was like, why would you need to do this?
Yeah.
And then just the other day, there was a project that came along where Chad was like, hey, so we have this React Native mobile app and now they want a website. And I was like,
yeah, this is it.
There's this thing. I don't know what its state is, but somebody should look into this. Like, maybe this is our chance. I get it now.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. So talking about going all the way outside to get back in again.
Yeah.
So. All right. Should we wrap up?
I think so. Show notes for this episode can be found at bikeshed.fm/136.
As always, ratings and reviews on iTunes are much appreciated. Feedback about this episode, tweet us at _bikeshed, email us at host at bikeshed.fm.
Yeah, especially if you liked
comment on the website.
Yeah, cool. Well, happy holidays.
That's generally what you say.
Oh,
but
that
I think
I
like that. Let's go with it.
I was like, yeah, no, that sounds like,
no, let's
those
keep
are
it.
Woods. Those
let's
are
keep
words.
It. Let's go with it.
Yeah.
All right, yeah, and happy holidays. We may have one more coming to you between Christmas and New Year's, but maybe not. But I don't know. We'll see you when we see you.
Yeah.
Thanks for listening.
Thank you.
Bye.
This podcast was brought to you by Thoughtbot. We are experienced designers and developers who turn your idea into the right product. With local studios in Boston, San Francisco, New York, London, Austin, Raleigh, and Washington, D.C., let's build something great together.